Oh, hi there. My name is Bonnie Lippincott, mom of two. During the transformation into motherhood, I learned I needed to trust my intuition, forgive myself, and know that I'm growing alongside my children. The title, Entry-Level Mom, is meant to highlight the obvious. We have no formal training, but everything we need is already within our DNA. This podcast is connected to my book, Entry-Level Mom, and the goal is to share honest and vulnerable stories with friends to encourage each other. I hope you enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by Dr. Krutika Bhatt. We discuss the topic of culture change, or raising children in a country different from the one you grew up in. According to Wikipedia, culture can be defined as all the ways of life, including arts, beliefs, codes of manners, dress, language, religion, and institutions of a population that are passed down through generations. Culture has been called, quote, the way of life for an entire society. Krutika shares her experience growing up in India and raising her children here in the U.S. We discuss various aspects of motherhood, including pregnancy, cultural differences in upbringing, and maintaining Indian traditions. Krutika also discusses her family's visits to India and her son's positive experience with the heightened senses of the Indian experience. Finally, Krutika reflects on the lessons learned from motherhood, like patience, and advice for her younger self, namely, not to worry, it will all work out. Today's topic is culture change, raising kids in a country different than the one you grew up in. I'm joined by my friend Krutika Bhatt. You're a doctor. Krutika is a mom of two and a brilliant researcher. I'm really excited for this topic because I've always been curious what it's like to raise children in a country other than the one you grew up in. I grew up in the United States and I'm raising my kids in the same country, and you grew up in India until the age of 23.
That's welcome. Cool. Thank you for having me. It's very exciting.
Before we dive into culture change, my first question is around motherhood. So how were your pregnancies and deliveries?
Well, for me, getting pregnant was the tough part with both my kids. I will to start from the beginning. I have PCOS. And so, as you know, my periods are irregular. I have like cycles where there's no ovulation happening. It's not for sure. So I had my, for me, getting conceiving was a bigger challenge with both my kids. So we tried like for a year or two, and then we went to the doctors and they started all these initial tests to see if we have to go to in vitro fertilization. Thankfully for us, we didn't have to go to that extent. So in the beginning, where they try if they can give you something like Clomid to help you ovulate. So that kind of, we did that each time with my first and my second for like 2-3 cycles. And that's when we got lucky. With my second, actually, it was a third round. It was not happening. And we were like, well, we will call it. It's fine. We have a super healthy child now. We have a son. Old one is a son. And so we thought, well, this is good. We have a child. It's not like we don't have a child. So if it doesn't happen, we are okay. But thankfully for us, the last cycle, it did happen. And now we have a 10-month-old beautiful daughter.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So getting conceiving was our issue. But then after that, the pregnancy was no problem at all. It was smooth. Although the first time I did not have gestational diabetes, but the second times I did get that. Maybe because of my age. I was a little older when I had conceived with my second child. So that was one of the factors. Maybe I was a little overweight. That might have been a problem. But whatever it was, I mean, I did have gestational diabetes for the second time. But I mean, you have so much help here in and around gestational diabetes. All the doctors helped me through it and I was able to manage it. And it was fine. The delivery was not a problem at all. Mm-hmm. Well, both me and my husband, we can like officially say that it was not a traumatic experience for us.
That's great.
I did take epidural both the times. I mean, if it's going to make your life easy, I'm going to take it.
Me too.
Yeah. I mean, I know moms who want to experience the pain of childbirth. Good for them. I mean, like, more power to them.
Absolutely.
But I wanted to kind of make my life easy. One other thing was, like, we have no support system here. We are immigrants. I'm from India. So when I came here, I mean, it is tough to have like family or friends. The first time though, we did have our parents, both my parents and my husband's parents, come over to help us with the baby.
Wonderful.
That was such a great help. And that's like I said, they can stay here with us for a few months, not for the longest time, but so after that, it's all us. But then that was helpful. But we lack that support system. And that's why the first time it was fine. The second time we decided we have been there. We have done it with the first child. Maybe we'll be able to manage on our own on the second child. And we did it. I mean, it was fine. Like I said, my daughter is 10 months old now. She's been thriving. So like I said, with pregnancy, it was fine. With delivery, it was fine. So far, we're going good.
That's great. Thank you for sharing. I think it's interesting with the Clomid that you took. A few of my friends, I've heard that that is a very effective medication. How did you feel taking it? You took it for 2 to 3 cycles with each, kind of, it sounds like.
That's correct. 2 to 3 cycles with each. So it's like I think on the third day of a period, you have to take it for 5 continuous days. It basically kind of helps in the ovulation. There is this mature egg, which is basically they do an ultrasound to check if there's a mature egg ready to be released. And so when it does release, we were hoping that it's not multiple eggs that are released. There are high chances of multiple pregnancies with it. And I don't know how moms do it with multiple pregnancies, but I wanted a single child at a time. So that's what we got, though. I mean, we were lucky there. But we, like I said, with broke pregnancies, 3 cycles each. I mean, depends. I mean, if you conceive with the first cycle, great. That's when you
For
struggle.
you, your journey was three.
My journey was 3.
Thank you. And then with gestational diabetes with your second, I remember at your baby shower, you were carrying that baby, you were walking around, you were so agile, and I thought, she's really, you looked very comfortable being pregnant. And so that's interesting that my perception was kind of what you were feeling too, where it was kind of an easy, not easy, but not traumatic pregnancy, I suppose.
True.
Is that
Well, I
true?
think that comes from my m mother. I mean, her line of generation, because I've seen women struggle with their pregnancies and the delivery and everything. My mom had it very easy. Her mom, my grandmom, she had it very easy. So maybe it's in our genes to have like the pregnancy process or the delivering goes smoothly for people. I mean, even my sister, she had her, easy pregnancy too. So I think it's in our genes. I mean, there are people back home who kind of tease, like, you should take up surrogacy, you know? I mean, if it's so easy for you just to kind of go through your life with being pregnant, like doing everything as usual, you know, like working or at home, like anything. It's so normal for us. So if people back home tease, like, you have to take up surrogacy, you know, it's so
Oh,
easy for you,
that's
like
great.
going through the pregnancy. I'm like, no, I'm happy with the two that I have.
Yeah, your energy level kind of matched your normal energy
That's
level
yeah, yeah.
from an outsider. And then you're such a researcher to highlight genes.
Sorry.
It was probably in our genetics. You're so smart.
Yeah.
But that's true. A probably interesting call out. So then my next question is, you grew up in India and you came to the United States for your PhD. And obviously you're raising your children here. First of all, what was it like growing up in India?
Oh, it's a different experience altogether. I mean, since I've seen both living in US and in India right now, I mean, I see the vast differences there. I mean, back home when we were kids, first of all, like the kids right now, I see they get everything. Like you don't ask for it and they have it. It was not like that back then. I mean, we treasured the one or two toys that we had. Oh my God, we treasured them. And well, we had dolls which had like broken arms, but we still played with them. You know, that's all we had, and we loved to play with them. And playing with neighboring kids, that was our thing. I mean, it like I know that people here, like we hardly know our neighbors sometimes, you know, we don't know our neighbors, we don't know the kids. We never had like a had to set up official play dates. I mean, if we felt like playing with our kids, we just walked to our neighbor's
Oh my
house.
gosh,
Yeah, I
that's so
mean,
different.
it is so different. And for me, since I have a child, I have children now, it was something for me to learn that, okay, I have to call up the parent. I have to set up a time to ask them to either come to our house or go to their house or like meet at a common place, like a play area to kind of officially set a play date. That is not a thing back home. We just like take our toys or and go to our neighbor's house or a friend's house and just play. And and they come over to our house. And it's mutually understood wherever we are, the parent there kind of takes over the responsibility of watching the kids for, in general, mm-hmm. It's not like we don't speak about it. It's official. It's mutually understood, you know?
So beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, so that's why actually, we grew up in a neighborhood where we knew everybody, like mm-hmm. evenings would be filled with the streets playing with children playing, like riding their bikes and all those beautiful memories, you know, it's so different from back there to here. I've seen that culture here too, but it is more official. Like you have to, like I said, you have to plan those things out. Unlike what happened back home. That is one big thing that I see. I mean, I had to learn how to set play dates for my child. I remember our kids went to Whole Child Academy, and I remember somebody, I think Rebecca was the one who left me a note with the teacher saying that she plans to have a play date with, so that she can bring her son to play with my son. I'm like, okay, like it's interesting. Like
I did that too. I would leave the post-it note and say, you know, my son wants to play with your son. And I thought it is so official the way I approached it culturally. I thought we should probably start with a park and then we go to the house.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. That is not the way how it works back there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful how you treasured the toys. Even if it had a broken arm, you didn't ask for more or want for, you know, you treasured them. Wonderful.
And I see the differences now. We were like scared, or like we respected our parents so much that we couldn't, like we were not comfortable asking for more, you know. Mm. But my child is like, oh, I'm done playing with this. Where's my next toy? You know, that's how I like, it's so different. It's so different that the way we've been brought up. Mm. I think it also depends from, I don't know, like the way, this is a first world country and that's a third world country, you know, it's so different the way we are brought up in each of these countries.
That's an important call out too.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That sounds so beautiful with the neighborhood kids riding bikes and the families just taking care of the children. It's just, there was no conversation about it, nothing official about it. That's like a true community.
Exactly. Yeah.
Everything is so individual here and it breaks my heart because it doesn't need to be that way.
It doesn't need to be that way. You're right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's something that you noticed? Well, you just touched on a few, but what's something that you noticed, big or small, that is different culturally for your kids growing up here? You know, you talked about the toys.
Yes.
And then the play dates are less official.
Yes. Yes. Well, there are some core Indian cultures that we try to kind of instill in our kids too, like small things. For example, I mean, back home we are taught never to touch books with our feet because we respect the books, never to touch that. Even if we do that, we kind of spontaneously kind of like say sorry or say something, you know, mm-hmm. like this is wrong. The same thing with our legs touching the elders. All small things, like if I just did this and then I'm like, this is not right.
We just touched toes accidentally under the table.
Yes.
And to you, that was...
That's not okay.
Not okay. Sorry about that. I see.
We try to do that with Dhruv too. Not with people maybe because he doesn't understand that much. At least with books, you know? Books, we respect books. I mean, not just books with anything in and around. Like if you respect something, don't use our feet. Like for us, feet is the most important most part of the body. It holds our weight. It is very, very responsible. So use it responsibly.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That is a script I'm going to add to my mothering language because often I can't tell you how many times I say, don't put your feet on the table.
Yeah.
And it sounds like I haven't continued the sentence to say our feet are the, you know, most responsible part of our body. Let's mm-hmm. use them with responsibility.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, all those small things, not using names to call out our elders. That is one thing that I saw that was culturally so different here. We use names to call out people here. We do not do that back there, back home. It I don't know. That's why I think everybody there is our uncles and aunts. You don't know their names. We just call them out as uncle or our aunts.
Sign of respect.
Out of respect, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way we show our respect, basically, not calling out their names. We have not reached that level yet to call their names.
The
first name.
Like a child calling their mommy's name, it would be Miss the last name?
Or yeah, Miss Aunt. Aunt. We just say Aunt.
Interesting. Are you teaching that to your children?
Or well, not here. I mean, it's different for Dhruv here. I mean, my child, he doesn't understand that. He's not grown up in that environment, so he doesn't get it. Yeah, but these are the things that we try to kind of instill in our child, but it's difficult, you know? And one other thing that we do is basically every day when you shower and you come back and when you're fresh, when you're like all pure, that's when we kind of pray. This is like all the Western cultures where they're taking up meditating and like all these healthy
mindset practices.
Yes, yeah. Mindset practices. We have been doing this since generations, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that we try with our child to do all that here. Sometimes, you know, the priorities are different. We still try. I mean, we don't get through with it all the time, but we still try.
I like how you said that it makes sense to like take a shower before praying or meditating, because you're kind of washing away the day and washing away like the old
That's
energy
right.
and sloughing off. Beautiful.
And like a few other things, like when we are like sick, I use normal like food items, for example, like the turmeric, the honey, ginger that everybody uses, but it's recently they have been trying to use that instead of a cough syrup.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never used cough syrup on Dhruv. I mean, ever since he was allowed to use honey, I've been making this homemade syrup for him with all these things, with lemon and ginger and turmeric and honey, to make him a syrup myself at home. And it works magic on him.
Yes. So much better than cough syrup with the food dye and the preservatives and horrible ingredients.
So yeah.
Turmeric, honey, lemon, and ginger. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all these are like helpful, like it boosts your energy, they're anti-inflammatory. So yeah, these things really, really help you. And you can use I was brought up like that, like all these little tiny, tiny, small traditions at home, back home, that I kind of try to bring here. I mean, and if it works with your child, it's great. They can use it too. I mean, I've given this recipe out to so many different people who were like really surprised that it works. They saw it with Dhruv and they tried it at home with themselves and it worked. So they were really,
the recipe. Yeah, that's great. So using natural remedies too.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And coming to food, I mean, there are a few different things. Like, for example, I know that a lot of kids here grow up with beige food, which is...
Beige food.
It
toast and macaroni and cheese and chicken nuggets and milk.
Yes, that is not how it works at our, in my house. I mean, we cook one food for all.
When you were saying that instead of eating beige food, you cook one meal for the whole family and everybody eats it.
Everybody eats it. I mean, so my daughter, she's 10 months old. She basically is doing the same thing too.
Mm.
So she's a foodie. She's completely different. She's amazed. She has amazed us in so many different ways so far. And with food, she does not want to eat the purees that we give her for a kid. She is not interested in that. She basically wants to eat what we have in our plate. So basically, we are four of us in our family and we eat the same thing every day.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said, I mean, I don't know if it's good or bad. We don't make an effort to kind of go the extra mile to give something different for your child if it suits their palate. But we try to incorporate their palate into our food. Like basically do the same thing that we eat for ourselves, give it to them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Ryan's really good at doing that. He'll make one meal and this is what we're having. And you can have the steak and the green beans and the rice separate, but we're going to eat them in a burrito. But he's really good at doing that.
Okay, yeah.
I'm guilty of catering and, a little bit for you. Oh, that doesn't match your palate. What would you like? But then I set myself up. It's a disaster. I should not be doing that. And if I could go back in time, I wouldn't have done it the first time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's easy. You just want your kids to eat sometimes, but, that's nice.
Yeah. And with food too, like back at home, when we were in India, when we were kids, we were not allowed to leave any food on the plate.
Mm.
If you sat for a meal, you were supposed to finish the meal. And if you're leaving something food behind, you're being disrespectful to the food. And that was not allowed. And so what my parents used to do is they kind of told us that if you leave some meal now, you get the leftovers for your next meal. Mm-hmm. And you have to finish that before you get something fresh or something new. And we knew. I mean, we had to finish everything to get the next fresh meal.
That's very resourceful.
That is very resourceful. And we have been trying to do that with Rube here at home. He does that. But we've seen that when he is eating at school, he still kind of leaves some food behind. But that's okay. I mean, but as long as he understands that we have to respect the food that is on our plate, that is all our main kind of, we want to give it to him. Like, that food is something that to be respected, you know?
Yes, I agree. I love that. Food is something to be respected. I think with us, we have chickens for leftover fruits and veggies, and then we have a dog for leftover meats.
Right.
So we're lucky with the cleanup, but we do have the conversation every time that if the dog or chickens are able to eat it, that this food is to be respected and we don't have to just throw it away.
Correct.
And so that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. So you talked about some family traditions that you maintain with some of the natural remedies, but that's more of like with food and everything.
Yeah.
Are there any traditions that you maintain?
Yeah. So as you know, we have a lot of like festivals that India celebrates, and we try to bring that over to here. I mean, follow that here. It's tough to kind of do every little thing that they do back home, but we try to do that. One thing that we have started since the birth of my daughter is a ceremony called Raksha Bandhan. Mm-hmm. It's basically like it's a ceremony where the sister ties like a wristband to her brother, saying that I'm your sister and I request you to protect me. And the brother kind of agrees to it and promises that he will take care of his sister. So, and we have started that tradition here. I mean, we have like every year we do that. I mean, it was just 1 year since we did that, but we want to continue doing that. That way, Dhruv, being the older brother, that he understands that he needs to take care of his sister. He needs to protect her. And he keeps saying that. He understands that. We tell him the stories behind it, why, how it came about, the ceremony and everything. He follows all of that. And the best thing is, so when the sister ties the Rakhi, we call that the wristband as Rakhi. We use a diya like to kind of praise the elder brother, kind of feed him dumb desserts and do the Rakhi and everything. And the brother from his side promises to take care of the sister, plus he gives a gift in return. And Dhruv was so kind. I mean, he did the daily chores and he collected like few quarters and dollars, and he bought her a gift from his money. That was beautiful. Yeah, I mean, we were so proud of you for doing that, and we will continue to do this. You know, like keep the small things, these traditions alive, even when we are here.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
What did he buy her?
He bought her a toy, some Elmo toy. Rattle, I think, Elmo Rattle.
A proud mom moment.
Oh, I was so proud of him, yes. Aww. And he saved it, he knew that that ceremony was coming up, and he saved his money to buy her a toy. I'm like, that's being very responsible. You're being very protective of her, which is great. And we're very proud of you.
What's the ceremony called again?
It's Raksha Bandhan.
Raksha Bandhan.
Yes.
And so it sounds like there's a band. And then I like that there's the Rakhi band to demonstrate to him, to really tie the message together, pun intended.
Yeah.
It all together, like that they're an agreement between siblings of protection and doing it every year to reinstate that message.
That's correct.
And both parties are involved, not just one telling the older sibling, but also the younger sibling. There's an understanding.
That's correct. That's correct. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all these things, if it was back home, it can come naturally. But here, we have to kind of make an effort to do it. You know, you have to plan it out and explain it to them, because they don't see it anywhere else. Mm. So you have to explain it to them why we're doing this, what this means, what the ceremony means, you know, and I mean, Dhruv surprises me sometimes. He gets it and he asks questions. He wants to understand more, and he adores his sister. So it kind of all ties together.
Mm, your son is so sweet. It's so wonderful.
Thank you.
Is that once a year? Is Raksha Bandhan once a year?
Yes, okay. Once a year.
Got it.
Yes. And we have I'm sure you know about Diwali.
Yes.
So it's basically the festival of lights. And what we try to do here is we get some clay and try to do the diyas ourselves. Like we kind of mold it in the shape of a diya and air dry it and kind of color it. Something like bringing parts and parts of our Indian culture and tradition back here to kind of keep Dhruv aware of his roots too, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And making it like a something he can partake in too, not just listening to a lesson.
That's correct. Yes.
I love that.
And we
play.
Do rangolis together. I don't know if you know, it's basically on the floor, we kind of draw different shapes and diagrams and color it with different colors. It's called a rangoli. It's usually done in front of any festivities we have that in front of our house. Just it's a colorful tradition that we kind of try to bring in here.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. My next question is visiting India. When you're visiting family in India, how often do you go back? And what does your son Dhruv say about the trip? What was his biggest takeaway?
Okay, so we decided that we will go back every year if possible. His grandparents are there. They would love for him to visit and everything, but depending on our work schedule, our vacation days, we the first time we took him to India was when he was 15 months old. He doesn't remember much of it from his trip back then, but then COVID happened, and so we couldn't go for the next 2 or 3 years. And then the second time he went was when he was about 5 and a half years old. And we were a little concerned, because he was here in US for the longest time. Going back to India, it's different. It's heightened senses basically when you go there, you know?
Mm.
It's bright, it's loud, it's the food is all amazing, like at least for us. I didn't know how his palate would take it.
Mm-hmm.
The music, the people around, there's so many people around it. We were a little worried that he might not take it well. But he surprised us. He absolutely loved it. Day two, and he was like, why are we in the US? We have to move back to India. He was that amazed with what he was seeing all around him. Mm-hmm. I have to say that he's an active child. If you gave him hurdles and in his daily life, he'd be happy, tackling all of that and being busy all the time. So it suited his personality there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He had so much to talk to with so many people. He on the streets, he would just kind of call out to people and start talking to them, telling him how he felt. And it's amazing.
Corner.
Yes. There were so many street foods that he wanted to try. Mm-hmm. We were worried that his tummy might not take it well, but he took it like a champ. He was absolutely fine with it.
Wonderful.
Yeah. He just wanted to move back. He's like, this is the best place ever. Why are we not here? You know?
Wow.
Yeah. He loved it. He absolutely loved it there. And even now he keeps asking us when is next time you're going? We have not been since a year. And I'm like, yeah, we will go there soon. We need to take his sister back home. She has not been to India yet, but he amazed us. He loved the way we went to the temple there. The whole immersive experience basically is what kind of amazed him. And we had told him a little bit about how it's going to be when we go back home, but we were so surprised the way he took it. He did not mind walking on the streets forever just to reach a place with so much crowd. And there's not a lot of concrete there. There's concrete, yes, but there's a lot of mud too. So if when it rains, it gets muddy and everything. He didn't mind that at all. He's like, yeah, that's okay. It's okay. I can get a little dirty. That's fine. You know, and he took it really well. He was really impressed with India.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised because he does have an adaptable personality, and he likes to be challenged, like you said.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's interesting that you said, it's interesting what you said with the heightened senses. Mm-hmm. I've never been to India,
mm-hmm.
but you said it's bright and loud with all the people and
yeah.
the food, rich in flavor.
Yeah.
And
the smell everywhere, different smell that you get, Yeah, it can be good and bad smell sometimes, yeah. And we were worried that the good smells are fine, but the bad smells he might complain about. Being here, he never is not often kind of exposed to such type of smell. And he was absolutely okay with it. I remember, there's some street food, we call it pani puri. It's a typical street food back home. And we wanted him to try that. And we took him and The street one was so small. We had to sit on the side of the road. That was not even like proper like chair or something. He didn't mind sitting there and eating. And he was like, "Yeah, I mean, everybody is doing that, so maybe I mean I'm supposed to do that too." Like he was so okay. He was very okay with everything that he saw there. He experienced. So we were surprised. I mean, that was his first time understanding the whole culture there, experiencing it, and he took it. He took it like it was nothing, and that kind of amazed us.
I think it is interesting that he was five, and because kids, don't they say they're in like a hypnotic state until they're seven? And so it's probably really beneficial that you took him before he turned seven, when we're all like a lot of our programming is done.
You know what I mean? Yeah, okay.
But that's really cool.
Yeah. We were very happy that he adapted to that kind of culture beautifully. Mm. He didn't mind that environment at all. He thrived in it, basically.
It's so cool that kids, why would a five-year-old mind? Like, of course a five-year-old wouldn't mind sitting on the street.
Girl,
it's
yeah.
so much easier than probably sitting in a chair.
Chair, right?
You know?
Yeah.
Did he come home and say, "This feels sterile"?
You know, that's what I mean. I remember like he came home and he's like, "It's quiet here." Mm. You know, I mean, we hit a highway and there's nothing, you know, you don't see anything in and around you. It's all concrete, you know. Mm-hmm. Back home, it's not like that. You see so many different things, like you're just sitting in a car and that kind of amazing. It's like so many different things happening. He was like constantly kind of observing what is happening in and around his surrounding. Mm. It's a different experience. You have to visit India.
I would love to. Yes. Can I come with you?
Oh, for sure. Anytime.
What has motherhood taught you?
Patience. A lot of patience.
Yes, me too.
Sleep deprivation.
It's a form of torture. But yes, that we can operate on little
yes,
sleep.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, juggling so many things without sleep, it's not a small feat, you know. It's fantastic that all the moms can do it and not complain about it. You know, and it's like we have to do it and we will do it. It's never, there's no discussion there.
Right. We just get through the next day.
Yeah.
There's no discussion.
There's no discussion. I mean, the way you kind of balance your work, your life, and like the transition happens so quick. Mm-hmm. One day you're without, your child is in your tummy and everything is normal. And the next day it's, the schedule is all upside down,
true.
But you still work around it and you're fine.
Hmm. You know? It's true. Patience and strength with sleep deprivation. I like that.
And I mean, at the end of the day, it's all worth it.
Yes.
They're angels when you're asleep. So at the end of the day, you're like, okay, we survived this day. We did just okay.
They're so precious.
They are precious.
It's the best job and the hardest job.
It is. It is.
These are true. It's so annoying. It's true.
It is true.
What would you tell your younger self?
It's amazing that there are two kids who are dependent on us. And if I think about it, how I was when I was young, it scares me thinking that in the future, there'll be like two individuals dependent on me, but it turned out to be okay. So I just want to tell myself, like, it's going to be okay. Like, you're doing just fine. You will do just fine. It's going to be okay.
You'd encourage yourself.
Yeah. I would say, don't overthink it. You know, you will do just fine.
That's beautiful. I think so much, there's so much information coming at us and so much mom guilt where I always
yes.
think I'm doing it wrong. And, oh, that's another way I'm doing it wrong. But if we just trust ourselves and trust our gut and trust our heart, we'll be just fine.
We'll be just fine. I had this mom guilt during my first pregnancy when breastfeeding. Oh my gosh. Breastfeeding is one thing that took me down hard the first time. I mean, I think it's like cycling. You know, if the baby latches and feeds fine, it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, my baby didn't latch well, and anything I do, it kind of didn't click. You know,
yes, you're right. It is like cycling, because it's a timing thing too.
Exactly. So it's like I just couldn't. I mean, I didn't produce enough milk to give my child, and in my head, I'm like, that's not right. I'm a mom. I'm supposed to feed my baby and I don't have enough food for my baby. You know, mm-hmm. That guilt was not good for me. And at some point I'm like, no, just, I'm not going to take it. I mean, he's fine. I can give him formula.
Yeah.
I'm like, but it took me some time. It took me a long time to reach that point. And then when I conceived with the second child, I discussed this with my husband, and I told him, like, the first time I wasn't prepared, so I didn't discuss this with you. Mm-hmm. You know, the emotional state I was in, I just couldn't say it. I mean, the mom guilt, he won't understand that. The mom guilt is completely different. It's my individual thing.
And it's a physical thing for us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down and I discussed with him. I'm like, it might be the same case second time too. Like, mm-hmm. I might not produce enough milk, so I'll have to kind of supplement my child with formula. And he's like, I'm absolutely fine. Our son turned out to be fine. She's going to be fine. And very, very early on, I had accepted that. And so the second time around, I was in a much better mental state. Mm-hmm. Then I was my first child, and I knew it. I mean, at the end of the day, they'll be fine.
Yes. Fed is best.
Exactly.
Fed is best. And you're right that guilt over breastfeeding or not breastfeeding doesn't help the situation.
No, it doesn't.
Taking away the pressure like you did with the second one by having the conversation with your husband.
Correct.
Set you up.
Yes.
In a better way to yes. move through it.
Exactly. I mean, discuss, like, be open with your partner. He doesn't. Because you're going through something that's your own struggle. If you don't use your words to tell it to your partner, it's going to be tough even more. Discuss, like, open communication is the key here. Everybody is supportive. Everybody understands. But yeah.
That's a very wise suggestion. Open communication with your partner and being open to whatever happens. Staying open. Different choices.
Choices.
Yeah.
Yes. You're fine. It's fine. I mean, kid will turn out just fine.
I mean, formula exists for a reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Well, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much, Floyd. It was great.
Fun. I learned a lot.
No, Avril, it was fun talking to you too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I believe by speaking honestly on all topics surrounding motherhood, it sheds love and light to them and is useful to parents. We are all in this together. BooksByBonnieLippincott.com has links to my social media pages, and it's where you can buy a copy of Entry Level Mom Book or my other books. My goal is to have a new podcast episode published every Wednesday for that midweek pick-me-up. If you enjoyed an episode, please share it with a friend or post it on social media. As always, please remember to be kind to yourself.